Hello, everyone. Welcome to the In The Mixer podcast. We are back with a Champions League final special edition, even though it's still on a Monday and there's nothing particularly special about it. I'm here with Elias. Say hello, Elias.
Hello, and I feel like we're doing specials every week now.
Specials? Well, every day with you, special, my friend.
Oh, man.
That is the deepest we'll get.
Yeah.
That's no Michael this week, because he is scaling the world.
Scaling the summit in Hamburg.
Well, I shouldn't say scaling, should I? Because, of course, the world's flat, so there's no...
Oh, yeah.
No peaks to scale. But he watched... in Germany, he watched the Champions League final. And I'm sure we'll get him to put something on Twitter about it, about what he thought. But what did you think, Ellen? What did we think? I'll let you take the floor in the early stages.
I thought it was an interesting game to start off with. I feel like Liverpool played well the first 30 minutes until that horrible injury for the main man himself, Mohamed Salah.
The main man. I think the update on that, I'm not sure what the official diagnosis is, but there's a chance he'll be back for the World Cup, so that's good news.
Egypt need him back for the World Cup, I'm pretty sure. So,
I think they probably need him more than Liverpool, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. Otherwise, they have to rely on the almost Golden Boy winner, Ramadan Sobhi.
Or Elneny, of course.
Oh, and Elneny, yeah.
Who's there? He'll be there in some way or another. So that injury was... Well, it wasn't the biggest talking point, but it was certainly the first talking point of the game. What did you think? Did you sign the petition to get Sergio Ramos punished by UEFA at all?
No.
The 100,000 signatures?
100,000? I saw it passed 500,000 this...
Oh, wow.
I think it was this morning. So that's interesting.
It's the first player to ever do something bad in a cup final. So this is the one that they're going to change around. But
didn't happen to a nicer guy either.
Sergio Ramos, such a lovely man. it's just funny. I found it quite funny that this was the one he was getting absolutely vindicated for, and then everyone's just ignoring the fact that he punched or elbowed Lewis Carrius in the face.
Yeah.
Later on in the match.
Yeah, but I've seen that mentioned as well, so it's probably in the description of the petition. So.
Yeah, it's probably there somewhere. No, not the first time he's been a bit dastard. I thought it was... I mean, with the whole Salah thing, I don't think there was any intent to dislocate Mo Salah's shoulder, at least.
No, I just think it's just ridiculous, the whole like claim that it was meant to injure him, because if you look at the replays, both Salah and Ramos are like tugging each other's like arms, and it just looks like a fair challenge, and then an unfortunate ending.
It's great. I don't think he's had an injury this season, has he, Salah?
No, and then it becomes like a shoulder injury as well, which is pretty like a weird football injury.
I suppose, I mean, against the likes of Sergio Ramos, you're going to be using your upper body a lot, so you can't really continue. But yeah, it was certainly sad when he went on. Not just him, though, Danny Carvajal as well, who, with all this, you know, the way the game went, he was almost forgotten in the aftermath of it. But apparently he may have a chance to get back to the World Cup. I saw the other day. That may have changed now, but apparently it's only a minor hamstring problem, because he had problems with his hamstring, I think, before, and he was worried he'd completely gone, but I think it was just a slight pull. So I think he may be back for the World Cup, which would be huge for him and Spain. Although I think they have a bit of cover in that position. But
there was doubts of him actually starting the game, because there were reports that he had gone injured during the warm-up as well. So I told my friends, like, I saw reports of this, and then he was in the starting lineup, so it feels a bit like, what would you risk that? Like, of course you wanted to play in the Champions League final, but
I think the players
went.
I mean, we talked about Lukaku last week in the FA Cup final. I think if that was the Champions League final, he probably would have forced himself to play.
Definitely.
I think it's just like, I mean, in that situation, it's like with the whole concussion thing, like, when that first came into effect, like, you should never ask the player, because the player in a big game is always going to want to play. So perhaps a bit naive on that. Although Carvajal, you know, he's a professional. I thought even though he went off, I thought Nacho did everything. I don't think he made a single, you know, blatant error. I thought he was pretty brilliant.
I've never seen him that attacking. And he looked like a goal threat every time like they went forward. Forward on the pitch as well. So I thought like he played better than Carvajal did the first 30 minutes because Mane had problems with Nacho, but he didn't have problems with Carvajal.
Mm.
Even though I think Mane was brilliant in this game as well. He had a lot more problems the last 60 than he had the first 30.
Yeah. I really like Nacho. He's like the Guti of defence. He'll be one of the ones who isn't, you know, particularly a Galactico, but he's, you know, he plays everywhere along the back line. And
yeah, he's an academy player as well, isn't he?
I think so, yeah. Certainly they signed him young, if not an academy player, but yeah, great performance from him. And but you mentioned Mane there. He seemed to me to have a lot more freedom when Salah came off, because I think he hit the post, didn't he, from the right side of the pitch. Like he was... Yeah. You know, finding a lot more space, and I think that was a much more fluid front line rather than the usual three when Lallana come on. Although, I mean, Lallana, he's had an injury plague season. He's had
a scandalous season with the under-23s, yeah, of course, assault and everything. I still have no idea how he wasn't punished more for that, because that was a literal assault.
It was crazy. Lovely images. Yeah, I mean, we had a couple of those. Did he make the World Cup squad, Lallana? I don't think he did he?
I can't remember. I don't think he did.
No, I don't think he did either. But if he did, I mean, it's him and Jack Wilshere both in the same situation, both getting missed out. But anyway, I think it's time we discuss the elephant in the room. Lewis Karius's two mistakes. What was going through your mind at the first one?
It's hard to know what he thought he was doing there, because of course he appealed for it to be disallowed, because
which you would. I mean, yeah, there's nothing else you can do.
Yeah, and of course he knew that he had made a mistake, and I think it's clear that he should have stood and that it stood. It's just what was he trying to do? Why would he roll it out there when he knows that Benzema is just like a meter from him? I don't know how that, like, how his mind thought that was a good idea to even risk that.
It's just one of those things, like, you do that 100 times and no one's even bothering to stick a leg out there. It's just this one time. I mean, the occasion obviously has something to do with it, because everyone goes the extra mile in the final. But yeah, it's just one of those things. Like, he just tries to release the ball early, you know, keep the Liverpool momentum going, trying to get the ball, you know, up the other end and the way Liverpool like to play. And it's just one of those things where Benzema's stuck a leg out. And it's just, I mean, it could have easily gone wide. You know, comparing it to the second mistake, this one was a bit, like, surreal. Whereas the other one, you almost, when the ball was in the air with the Bell shot, you almost expected something was going to, like, he wasn't going to hold it. It's like, can you think of anything like the first mistake, though? Because I mean, it's not exact same, but do you know the Shea given, where he rolls the ball, and then I think it's Dion Dublin who's off the pitch. This is from like 90s football, and he just runs behind him and just kicks it in.
Yeah, that's what it reminded me of, something like that. But this is more conscious. Like, of course, Shea given doesn't know that Dublin is behind him. If he had the dube, then he probably would have known that Dion
would have heard him coming from a mile away.
but this was just like such a conscious error, and there's so much he could have done differently. With the Shea Given thing, that is just like pure coincidence that he didn't hear the fans shout that there was somebody behind him or whatever. I just think it's such a silly mistake, and it's especially during such a massive game.
Yeah.
Like, you can't do that.
Yeah, there's been questions about the Liverpool goalkeeper, of course, all season and last. He seems to, you know, he was given the nod around the midway point of the season as the first team keeper. And he was kind of hitting form. Like, obviously he's not one of the best keepers in the league, but he was becoming a more stable, a more stable goalkeeper than Mignolet ever really was for Liverpool. And it just all almost went to his head, like, and you saw with the how quickly, you know, a lot of keepers would have seen Benzema and held the ball and just, I don't know. It's just a weird one, because it's one of those things, like, it's all going right for him. You know, he's probably achieving or overachieving in recent months. And then just the one time that mistake's happened and brings you back down to earth is the Champions League final. And it's, I mean, I'm a Spurs fan, and we've had Gomez in goal for, like, you know, I was, you know, I'm pretty sure he had two games in a row where he let the ball go through his legs. And it's just, you come to expect it almost. But then with Karius, it's like, he was in a bit of form. You didn't expect it. And it was so surreal. And it's just like, I mean, I can still play it back in my head, and I can still sort of, you know, mouth agape, like just staring at the TV as this ball slowly trickles into the net. Like, I just, yeah. It's just so weird. And yeah, of course, the second one, I mean, Bale's second goal. I mean, people were saying Karius doesn't make that mistake if he hasn't made the first one. I think Bale doesn't take that shot if he hasn't already scored that audacious bicycle kick. Let's talk about that Bale bicycle kick, because we don't want to absolutely, you know, slaughter Karius. And with such a good goal in a game, I mean, the only thing I'll say about it is it's a shame it wasn't the winner, to be honest.
Well, I certainly hope that Karius would have been more more forgiven if that was the winner, because, like, it's such a great goal. I know you've been saying this Zidane goal is overrated and all for a very, very long time, and now you can finally say that is the best goal in a Champions League final ever. Yeah,
unbelievable.
So, you got your wishes
fulfilled.
Couldn't have come from a better player from your standpoint either, I think.
No, it's lovely. I mean, that's the second Champions League final he's won for Madrid now, almost single-handedly. But yeah, it's a crazy. Can you remember the last time a bicycle kick was scored in a Champions League final, Elias?
No, should I?
Last year, Mandzukic.
Oh yeah! Oh yeah! Oh man, that was a great one as well.
That was a great one as well. That was almost forgotten because they lost. But yeah, this one is just, like, I think the Ronaldo one, I think that's the comparison that's been made. I think the Ronaldo one looks better because he has a lot more time to position himself. Yeah. But with Bale's one, it's like, what else can he do? Like, he shouldn't even be getting that on target. It's absolutely outrageous goal.
It's such a technical, like, it's so hard to do that technically, especially since the ball is pretty much behind him. So he somehow, like, lifts the ball up and gets that much power on it. And he had no time. That Marcelo cross is so, like, powerful.
Yeah.
So I just don't see a comparison to that, except maybe, like, Rooney's bicycle kick. Because he shouldn't even, like, have the time to go up for that. the cross is so powerful that he shouldn't have the time to do that, especially with Bale. He's not a small guy.
No, it's a goal that is difficult to describe in terms of, you know, ability, because, yeah, like you say, he has, I mean, like, what else can he do? All he can, like, I mean, he shouldn't even be doing that, to be honest. But and a bit understated as well was actually the build up to the goal. I mean, the finish takes all the glory, but it's actually a nice little build up as well from Madrid. And I thought the players like Kroos and Modric in the middle of the park sort of showed Liverpool what they were perhaps missing in that midfield area.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to say this as well, because I personally thought that Kroos had a very poor game. I usually don't see him misplace that many passes and being so slow on the ball, because he's so confident in his own ability and his own passing that you rarely see him make a mistake. But I felt like this game he was completely overrun by the Liverpool midfield and was just way too slow. I don't know if it was complacency or if it was just not having, like, his head in the game, because I've never seen Kroos like that. That was one of the, like, the main points I saw about Real Madrid actually being able to lose this game.
I think there was a lovely little clip as well. I don't know if you've seen it, the Bale goal from behind the goal, from, like, the fan cam. And, like, when he scores, you see all the Madrid players, like, going, like, you know, running over to him. And then you just see Modric just collapse in the middle of the pitch. Like, what have I just seen?
Yeah.
That's the reaction of a true football purist, that, at least.
And of course, the Zidane,
oh, yes.
Like a hand wrist thing.
Lovely, yeah. I think they showed his reaction to Ronaldo's bicycle hit, and it was very similar. But yeah. No, that's crazy. The Bale had raised questions. We'll talk about transfers in part two, but Bale did raise questions about his future when he said he wasn't happy, he wasn't playing. I think it was the most obvious come and get me plea. There wasn't particularly any...
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw this, because I don't know if it was the same broadcast, because obviously...
Well, the commentator, the absolutely over, like, ambitious commentator that I've ever heard, I think it was, like, an Arabic commentator.
Yeah.
Or a journalist or whatever. He was screaming the questions to Bale in the most, like, weird ways, and... You can see at a few questions he almost couldn't like hold himself. Bale, that was at least one of the like the questionnaires that I saw after the game.
I mean, it's got to be so weird, isn't it? If he comes back to the Premier League, well, it's going to be weird for me if it's not on a Spurs shirt. I'm going to be very upset if he joins Manchester United. But I'm hearing multiple reports about that move. Apparently, he's worried about Mourinho's style of play. But in other way, you know, what other club can he really move to?
I have got a suggestion for Bale if you're listening.
is it Willian for Bale on a swap deal?
No. It's another swap deal.
If
I know that Real Madrid and Barcelona are interested in Marcus Alonso. So if we put Marcus Alonso and a bit of money in for Bale, then we can have a Bale at Hazard left wing next season.
Bale left back.
Yes.
Hazard.
Oh, yes.
Back. Nice.
Oh, I would love that.
I'm sure you would. That's the sort of way Conte would play as well. Sticking a winger at left wing back. Ronaldo raised questions about his future as well, saying it was a pleasure to play for Real Madrid, or something of that. Like, but it's come out already that it's fine. He's not going anywhere. I think that was pretty obvious.
It's always fine, isn't it? When it comes to Ronaldo, like he's not going to leave.
It's fine unless he doesn't score in the Champions League final.
Ah, yeah. Well,
because of a man running onto the pitch trying to attack him.
I saw that. He was so disappointed when that happened.
Oh, man. And it's almost like he wants it all to be about him or something.
Oh, yeah. I've never seen Ronaldo do anything like that. So. And also, I've seen people questioning... Like, why would Bale and Ronaldo do this after they've just won, like, the biggest trophy in world football? But it's the perfect way to do it.
Go on a high.
Yeah, it's like, not only that, but also they got the whole world's eyes on them. Like, if it's a random La Liga game, then, of course, if they say something, it's going to be publicised, but maybe not for the whole world to see. But a Champions League final, to go out and say something like that, then they know it's serious.
Yeah, of course. I forgot what I was going to say now. Real Madrid, like, I think this season they've had problems in the league. With Ronaldo, was he 32 now? I think Modric is 30, Kroos is 31, I think. It's not a young side, is it? Mm-hmm. Do you think it might be a good time for players like Bale to jump ship, considering perhaps how Real Madrid may be lacking next season even more than they did this season?
I mean,
they'll win the Champions League, so it'll be fine, but...
Yeah. It feels like that is the main... Like, they know that Barcelona are getting stronger and stronger, even though they weren't particularly, like, flawless this season. But neither were Real Madrid, of course, because they didn't even finish second. So, I just feel like maybe... I think that Bale is going to leave. I really do. But Ronaldo's definitely not leaving. And I think Real Madrid is just going to sign probably Neymar. It's probably going to happen.
There's some crazy transfer rumours we'll talk about in the next part. Just finally on the Real Madrid triumph. Both Madrid clubs winning the Champions League and Europa League. Is it fair to say Spain are going to win the World Cup?
Maybe. Well, you've seen the Guardiola stat.
Yeah.
So England.
England. Jewels remain still gleaming, ladies and gentlemen. Yep. Right, we're going to go to a break and we're going to be back talking about playoff finals and transfers. Don't go anywhere. Hello, welcome back to part two of the In the Mixer podcast. That was the Champions League. We're going to chat about transfers now and a bit of about where else to start, but Champions League finalists, Liverpool, who wrapped up the Fabinho deal. Talks he was going to leave last season. Finally negotiated his way out of the French League club, I guess. I mean, it's weird because they're not even French, but hey, who knows? Maybe he just stuck around for the Grand Prix and then after that he's like, right, I'm gone. But Fabinho is an interesting one. He's had a very good season, not last season, but the season before with that Monaco team who broke all sorts of records in the Champions League with such a young squad. Last season was the only one really to stick around from that, him and Lamar, really. Not in the Brazil squad. Do you think that may have been a motivation for his move to Liverpool?
I don't know. He probably knows that he is on the verge of like being a Brazil international like on a permanent basis, even if he would have stayed at Monaco. Because I feel like Monaco is still a, such a high like profile club that it probably didn't matter that he played very well this season, even if he didn't win the league. But just he knows that he's good enough. And I think that the Brazil manager also knows that Fabinho is good enough. It's just that there are so many like players that are better in that position in Brazil. So,
well, yeah, Fernandinho and Casemiro are the two who play that holding role.
So two literally like world-class, really world-class players. Like Fernandinho, of course, winning the Premier League with Manchester City, and Casemiro, who's been absolutely amazing for Real Madrid ever since he signed from Porto. So it's just so much competition in that midfield.
But you don't think that's the reason he went to Liverpool? Do you think it's just a case of that's the next step in his career, really?
Yeah, I definitely think that he's more ambitious than Monaco, and I think he realizes that if he's going to be playing in a Liga team, he needs to play for PSG if he wants to do something with his career. Because playing for Monaco, of course, you're probably always going to be second or third in France. And I think he wants to do something more, and he's seen what Liverpool can do and how ambitious Liverpool are, especially in the Champions League this season. They've still got quite a bit of work to do in the Premier League if they want to compete for that title, I think. So
makes interesting reading for Liverpool's midfield next season. It's obviously Milner, Henderson. I imagine it would be Milner and Oxlade-Chamberlain who are the two that slot out of that midfield three. Obviously, Chan's left or leaving on a free transfer to Juventus is the rumour, and it will be Henderson, whether you agree with that or not. He's the captain, so I assume he'll start. Henderson, Fabinho and Keita next season. I mean, it's not a bad midfield, is it? A midfield three.
No, it's not, but you still can't really... Like, of course, Milner is getting older. He's not getting younger, as some footballers are.
Benjamin Button, of course.
Exactly.
The famous striker.
So he probably is all right with having a season like he had this season. Maybe like a few less games, and of course he can also fill in at the wingback position if he really needs to.
I'm sure he'll be extremely happy with that, considering.
Of course he loves to play there, but I feel like Milner just plays wherever his manager wants him to play, and he can play in so many. I can see him slot back in slot into like a playing like defender role, like a central defender role. I can see Milner being that kind of player. Like with Steven Gerrard drop back centre back for Liverpool a few times, but still you got Wijnaldum, of course.
That's the other one.
That probably is not happy being a bench warmer, and if that is the midfield that they're going to put up with next season, he's probably going to leave. And I can see him go back to Newcastle. I really can.
It's not a bad shout. Milner, of course, left Manchester City because his playing time diminished as the money rolled in. And of course, I completely forgot about Wijnaldum there. A lot of players, there's a big midfield to juggle, but if they go far in all the cup competitions like they did this year, they're going to need that rotation. And a lot has been said about their squad depth as to be one of the reasons they didn't, overturn Madrid. But we'll see what this Liverpool team can do next season, because I think they'll probably be better next season in the league, especially. We'll move now to Socrates at Arsenal, which looks like it's pretty much going to get done. 15 million, I think, is the which is a quite a, you know, cheap fee. And who was the other Greek centre back they signed? They go for a whole Greek backline.
Mavropanos, who got sent off 15 minutes into a game in the was it the FA Cup, I think.
Well, he's doing the bit.
Was it semi final?
I'm not even sure. I'll be honest. Yeah.
I don't know. It's just he didn't have a great debut season at Arsenal. Wasn't that a deadline signing?
I think it might have been. I think
because I'm pretty sure they announced it like it was like some massive signing, and then he just
Rob Holding esque.
Yeah, and he just Mavropanos. Oh, who's that?
But like you say, it is a bit more sort of the Socrates sign is a bit more of a more of a name than. Yeah. They've signed in the past. I'm not sure how much Emery's had to do with this. I would assume nothing at all, considering he's just come in. But I mean, it's just going to bolster the attacking lines and the defensive lines. There's not really much you can argue about that.
No, and they definitely need to sign centre backs. They've been struggling for a few seasons now getting a stable defending partnership of any of their defenders in the club. And of course now when Mertesacker hangs up his boots to become a academy coach or director of football, head of youth development, I can't remember what his role was.
I think he's the youth coach.
Then of course they haven't got that that depth, because Mertesacker is still a good defender. He's not that old, he's like 31, 32 I think. But it's still an option that he's gone because he hangs up his boots. And then when you got Chambers, Holding, Koscielny, who's probably going to be injured for a while now.
Yeah, he's never fit. Mustafi as well.
Mustafi needs him.
It's hard to say because Emery could bring a lot more out of these players. Like Mustafi, I was a fan of his when he was at Valencia, and I was a bit disappointed Spurs didn't sign him when Arsenal signed him. Obviously, that my opinion on him has changed since seeing him in the Premier League week in, week out. But that could Emery could get a lot more out of these players than perhaps Wenger could.
Yeah, it feels a bit. Yeah, it's like I always bring up with Puel, like it feels like a bit more man management coach than Wenger was. Of course, Wenger has developed so many good players, but him being so like stubborn with his playing style, of course, that could hinder a few like prospects, and especially since he never really put that much put that much like training into defending. He was more that all-out attack style of manager that we talked about last week, I think. So if Emery can actually get the defense going, then I think Arsenal could be decent, because they got the attacking force they need. They got the creative players in Mkhitaryan, in Iwobi, who can still become something, even though his season wasn't the best. I still feel like Danny Welbeck has got potential, even though everybody in England disagrees with me.
That's the exciting thing about Emery, isn't it? All these players have a clean slate. They could come out next season and all be fantastic. Apart from Aubameyang, who can't really improve because he was so good last season.
And especially with the Aubameyang and Lacazette up front, if they decide to play both up front, that's a very lethal partnership. I think Arsenal are going to be interesting next season, even though I don't think they're going to finish top four.
I think they won't quite nap top four, but I think they'll be a lot better to watch next season.
Yeah.
You wanted to chat a bit about Brighton doing bits, quote-unquote.
So Brighton, of course, have started off very interestingly with the signing the Romanian striker, Florin Andone, I think that's how you pronounce it. From a Deportivo La Coruña, of course, got relegated under Clarence Seedorf this season.
I didn't mean to laugh at that.
They're looking to bring in a few more players very early on. I'm not sure if they are looking to continue with this strategy of actually signing players that are from like relegated teams, because I could see them grabbing a few players from Stoke and Swansea. Just because I feel like Brighton, they're still an interesting prospect in the Premier League, because Chris Hughton is a decent manager, and yeah, I can just see them like having that transfer philosophy of signing players that have just recently gone down and want like a new challenge.
Mm. The scouting network, I think, is one of the most suitable for them. I think it's one of the most overachieving. You know, when you look at the signings of Gross and Proper last season, who I personally hadn't heard of before the season started. Yeah. Now I've heard of Andone. Are Romania in the World Cup? I don't think they are.
No.
I was going to say perhaps they got this early to so his price didn't go up during the World Cup, but I saw him at the Euros. He was all right, missed a couple of good chances. So it'll be interesting to see how he does for them. But Elias, is this the end of Lacadia at Brighton? Is that what this signing means?
No.
Is Andone a better Dutchman?
No. What?
He's got Seedorf in there. You know, he's got a bit of Seedorf. He could claim that.
I feel like it's a good signing because I don't really see Brighton having that kind of a centre forward. Who is a bit more like maybe technical, poacher-ish in their play style, especially since the other centre forward they got is Glenn Murray, Tom Hemed, Leandro Oyua, who are all three target men pretty much.
Mm.
And Lokadia, of course, we haven't really seen what he can do and if he's even going to play as a striker at Brighton. So I think it's a good signing because it feels like that kind of striker that could potentially score 10 plus goals in the Premier League for a team like Brighton. So, yeah, I'm interested about that.
Mm. Yeah, we'll see how that goes. A couple of international friendlies now before we head on to the playoffs. A couple happened last night. I think there'll probably be some tonight. This is Tuesday recording this. But Italy 2, Saudi Arabia 1 is the one that caught my eyes. Balotelli, after a 4-year absence, is his best buddy, Roberto Mancini, now the Italian manager, recalled him and he scored a goal.
Yep. And
it was a lovely one.
He should just be in the Italy squad. I don't know. Of course, he's always had problems with the Italy coaches, and then Mancini comes in, and they're like best friends, of course, Mancini and Balotelli. So it's just a match made in heaven, isn't it? Balotelli's is smashing in like 40 goals at the 2020 Euros.
Yeah, could happen. Did you see the goal he scored? Because it was a smash. It was a lovely one. Lovely goal.
He always scores smashing goals. So.
Yeah, it's true. I think we've spoken before on this podcast how we thought perhaps, you know, there's a reason why he's not getting in the team. But I think his exodus is now over. I think it's a new era for Italy, especially after not getting to the World Cup. And I think he could, if he forms a partnership with Belotti up front, and of course they got Immobile there as well, who we'll see if this season was a bit of a, you know, a bit of a lucky one, a bit, you know, see if he can keep up his goal scoring form for Lazio. They could, you know, they have a really good front, you know, pairing there, which they haven't had for the last few seasons, considering they started the last Euros they played in with Graziano Pella up front. But yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's in China, isn't he?
Yeah, I'm sure he is somewhere raking in the dough. Yeah. Should we talk about the playoffs quickly? I imagine we probably only saw one of these. Villa 0, Fulham 1 is probably the one. Did you watch this one? Because you are a big fan of Fulham, aren't you?
I did watch it, yeah. And I thought it was a good game. I always think the player... Like, as I said, I think that was last week's or 2 weeks ago's episode. I'm not a massive fan of the semi-final games.
Yeah, I'm 2-1. 2-1, I lost that argument. You and Michael hate the structure.
Yeah, and the final always lives up to expectations, I think. Especially with last season, I think, when Huddersfield went up. I just think they are just so interesting to watch, these games, because you never know what kind of approach the players will, or the managers and players will have. And I feel like they both completely went for it, and it was such a joy to watch. And
Go on, sorry.
Yeah, and just the players that had been talked about a lot in at least in Swedish television was Jack Grealish and Ryan Sessegnon, of course, for both teams. And I think they both had amazing games.
I was just going to say, like, every year, two teams, their whole season comes down to one game. Like, it's very rare. I mean, this season, you could say Real Madrid's season hinged on that Champions League final, but every season, the Championship and the League One, League Two playoff final is... I mean, the differences between Villa, if they'd won that game compared to now losing it and looking like they're going to lose a lot of players, like Terry and, you know, Grealish, like you said, had a good game, but it looks like he could be going. And then you compare that to if Fulham lost, they could have lost Kearney and Vrsesnjo. Like, it's such huge stakes.
Yeah.
And I think that's what adds to the, you know, there's talk of this like £150 million game, whatever, but it's the fact that promotion is such a big deal, not just for the money, but for the fact that these players want to play Premier League football. All of the players in that top half of the Championship dream of playing Premier League football, either one day or again. The stakes are huge in terms of squad. But yeah, it was a lovely goal, wasn't it? Sessegnon to Kearney, the two main men.
Yeah.
It was really nice. And a lovely finish as well. I mean, those spaces are always going to open up when you play Alan Hutton at left back, I think.
Alan Hutton, the well-travelled man, as he is known as now. And
the journeyman, yeah, of course.
Yeah, definitely a journeyman. And even though you can see the Aston Villa team as a very experienced team, they're all Premier League players, pretty much, that whole back line. If you start Lewis Graben, I don't think you're going to get to the Premier League. Because Lewis Graben is one of the most selfish like strikers I've seen like play, and especially in this game he was just nowhere to be found, he was constantly like complaining to his teammates about not like getting passes and crosses, and it's just so horrible to see. And I've criticized Lukaku for doing this as well, just the way he like appears on the pitch in front of his teammates and everything is not a pleasant sight.
Yeah, I mean, you sort of get away with it if you're Ronaldo.
Yeah.
But if you're Lewis Graben, I don't think you do. Of course, in the books at Bournemouth, he'll be going back there from his loan spell, I think.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens to him next season. But yeah, a huge game. How do you think Villa will do next season? Because I think the team's coming down this season. Swansea, Stoke and West Brom, I think, are a different kettle of fish. Compared to the teams that are in there, I don't think any of them will particularly be challenging for automatic promotion. So Villa, I mean, Bruce is a good manager at that level, in my personal opinion. I know Michael would completely disagree with me, but I mean, if they hold on to, these games are weird. That, you know, it can end with Bruce, people like Bruce getting sacked. I know he's had a tough time with the fans this season. You know, in the first half where they were struggling a bit, I think letting him go would be silly. I think he could really, you know, rebuild that squad and have them pushing again for promotion.
Yeah, I can see them being like contenders next season, but it's so hard to say in the Championship because teams that are contenders before the season starts, they usually don't do that well. especially since the squad that Aston Villa's got is definitely aging. They had Glenn Whelan on the bench. I didn't even realise that. And he's not a Premier League player anymore. And I don't feel like James Chester has ever been a Premier League player, even though he's played in the Premier League. El Mohammadi, we saw he was not the best of Premier League players at Sunderland. And Hull, of course. And Alan Hutton is Alan Hutton. I think the only, like, you should build on this team, but you still need to become a bit more like younger in the building process. Of course, I know Steve Bruce is the manager that likes to sign experienced players. Miles Jendernak is a great experienced player to build a team around, I think, because he's just got so much like will and so much experience, and he can definitely do it at the highest level. But
yeah.
Alan Hutton.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a bit of a conflicting personalities in that team, and that's probably what brought them down, made them lose this playoff final.
Do you think he could be one of those managers who sort of is a bit worried, like an old man sort of worried with new technology, like who only ever signed players he knows, but the only problem with doing that is eventually those players won't be there anymore and you end up with no one?
Harry Redknapp.
literally. The and then the players Harry he does Redknapp. Sign, he doesn't know who they are or how good they are or how to use them.
Yep.
To League One, the League One player, Rotherham 2, Shrewsbury 1. My goal of the weekend, one of my goals of the weekend, we'll talk about the other one in a minute, but Shrewsbury's goal in this game, you probably haven't seen Elias because I don't think the League One playoff is probably readily available in Sweden. But no, it's a lovely little free kick routine. Sort of about 25 yards out, past the edge of the box on the floor, then passed straight into the box first time, then stuck in. It was a lovely goal. straight off the training ground. Exeter 3, Coventry. Oh, sorry, Exeter 1, Coventry 3. I've written that the wrong way around. Coventry back up to the League One.
First promotion in like 60 years.
Oh,
or whatever.
Man, it is so good to finally Coventry have something to celebrate. Those fans deserve it. They've been through some serious rubbish. Exeter, I think that's the second playoff final loss in a row now. So they'll be worrying. I think the manager could be off to MK Dons as well. Paul Tisdale.
Ooh, and that's a team to go to, isn't it?
This is a team to go to, who of course are in the same division as them.
Yep.
He was actually odds on to go even like before the playoff final. So if Exeter had got promoted, he may still have left there to there. But the Women's Champions League final as well finished Wolfsburg 1, Lyon 4. Elias, this was 0-0 at full time. I watched up until that moment.
Oh, it's the usual Phil Kerr's when he stopped watching and like six goals.
I turn off, and then the first... I went upstairs to, you know, and I just got sidetracked. So, of course, in the first 15 minutes, the first half of extra time, there's four goals and a red card. Wolfsburg actually took the lead, but Lyon eventually wrapping up 4-1. I think that's their third Champions League in a row, which is, you know, absolute dominance from them. And I think Lucy Bronze may be the first English woman to win the Champions League. I could be wrong there, but an excellent achievement from the Lyon team. And just to end, Kieran Sadlier of Cork City. Have you seen this? You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It's basically, I'll sum it up for you. He scored against St. Partick's Athletic from his own penalty area. So... it was a nice one.
The ball, like, was it a lot of wind or whatever? Because the replay I watched, the ball is bouncing absurdly quickly.
Who knows? I'm not sure of the quality of pitches in the Irish League, but that could have been bounced. They could have been hitting some bubbles and just continuing going. But he gave it some welly. Basically, the keeper was up for the corner, and he just hit it from the corner of his own box as hard as he could, and it's just ended up...
Bouncing and rolling in. Like, I don't think I've seen... Did you play with synthetic grass in the Irish League? Because I feel like that's probably why that went in. Because with
you're massively overestimating my level of understanding of that league.
Because I feel like that ball would not have gone in if it was normal grass.
This is just a weird one. Yeah. You're thinking as you're watching it, surely there's someone... No, there's no one there. It's going in. Okay. Lovely. Well, they lost anyway, so... sorry, they didn't. Of course they didn't. Why would they lose if the keeper was up for a corner?
Yeah, come on, man.
I put defeat, but it's defeat of course. Did you want to end on a quick heroes and villains? Or is it too obvious?
Let's just agree that Bale is the hero and Karius is the villain.
I was going to say Ramos the villain.
Okay. Oh.
He fits the part.
All right.
I think that's the end of the episode now. If you want to sign off there,
yeah, I feel like we've covered everything except one thing.
Ooh,
it's
always exciting when you come out of the blue. When I'm about to end the part or something, you're just like, boom! I'm coming in with some info.
It's just things that I I see when I'm just looking at like transfers and stuff like that, because there are players and players that like leave clubs. Very early, but I saw Mr. Hedman Harnik, Mr. Martin Harnik, signed for Werder Bremen from Hanover, and I got like memories back from when Sweden played Austria in the Euros, I think 2012, and it's just a player that I completely forgot he's still playing.
Who did he used to play for? Because I can't picture him at all.
I can send you a picture of this, but it was called Hedman Harnik because he's got like that haircut where he's got like medium like long hair with a headband every time.
Yeah,
he plays.
Okay.
But I also saw that Jeffrey Kondogbia went from Inter to Valencia for £25 million pounds, which is insane. I think.
Had a brilliant loan spell at Valencia last season. That's a great deal for Valencia.
Yeah, so just like signings that are happening very early that for pretty like large fees, like even though they're loans, you should probably like know about them and they probably should be like publicized more because John Guidetti, of course, was on loan from Celta Vigo to Alavés and got bought for £4 million.
Nice.
just now. So
yeah, we need to get ready for these transfers, because obviously with the Premier League shutting on the first day of the season this season.
Yes.
And the excited. World Cup. The weeks before the World Cup and the weeks after the World Cup are going to be busy. Going to be very busy. All right, so I think we're going to sign off there. Thank you very much for listening. Sorry it's such a short episode this week, but I think you can forgive us considering there was very little football to chat about. We'll be back next week with, I think, some World Cup episodes, Elias. Is that right?
Yeah, if we can get a proper structure.
If we can get a structure and if we can get a third member, because Michael is... Hopefully he comes back to the country in one piece, and we will give you some previews of the upcoming tournament. And if you want to follow us on Twitter at In The Mixer Show, that would be very much appreciated. InTheMixerPodcast@gmail.com for any questions or any information you want to ask us. Feel free to drop us an email there. And I think that's everything. So we'll say goodbye.
Goodbye.
And we'll catch you next time in The Mixer.